Hello and welcome to the Dr. Niman Show podcast. Today is Thursday, December 10th, 2020. There's been some updates on the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic that Dr. Niman would like to go over. For the latest information, we go to Dr. Niman.
Okay, thanks, Ryan. Yeah, I thought today I'd give an update on the vaccine as well as the case count and death toll in the U.S., which looks like it's going to top 3,000 for the second day in a row. It officially or widely reported top 3,000 for the first time yesterday. And so far I've got today a 2,900, but there's three more states to report. And if they report what they had yesterday, then that would bring it over 3,000 for the second day in a row. So whether it's technically about 3,000 or 29 something, really doesn't make much difference. The bottom line is that it's moved up to a new level. And the fact that it's at that level today and yesterday virtually assures that it'll be at that level tomorrow, which is the usually the highest day. Friday are generally is the highest day for cases, and the number of deaths of late seem to be somewhat paralleling, although they're not exactly related. The deaths are a trailing indicator, and the deaths that are being reported right now really are related to people that were infected probably about a month ago or so. But as far as the vaccine is concerned, just as a quick update on that, the committee did recommend that it get approved by the FDA for emergency use. The FDA, I think, will make their decision tomorrow, and they'll use the recommendation and that information to make their decision. It's widely anticipated that they will approve will give an emergency use authorization. The committee looking at it, I think, voted 17-4-1 for use for those 16 and over. There were some questions about the amount of data that they have for 16 and 17 year olds. But essentially that is what the recommendation, those that are 16 and over would be able to use this under an emergency use authorization. If the FDA does make that approval tomorrow, then the U.S. would be, I believe, the fifth country to have approved the Pfizer vaccine. The first one was the United Kingdom, and then that was followed by Bahrain, and then Canada, and most recently Saudi Arabia. So those four countries have all approved this use, and I think so far the only one that's actually started vaccinating people was the UK, who started yesterday, I believe. And they did have a couple patients who did have an anaphylactic reaction, and so there may be a limit on patients that have a history of having an allergic reaction to vaccinations or other things. And it may not be recommended for those people. But it isn't approved yet. The FDA still has to vote on it. I believe they're scheduled to meet tomorrow, and I think they're supposed to vote tomorrow unless it gets extended. But either tomorrow or the weekend or the beginning of the week should be approved. There are some reports that suggest it's already been distributed to some hospitals, hasn't been used yet, but it's in their freezers. The other reports say that it is at a few locations in Michigan, I think, and scheduled for shipments to FedEx, which is going to distribute it in the West, and to UPS, which is scheduled to distribute it in the eastern half of the country. So either it seems likely that next week the first cases in the U.S. or patients in the U.S. will be getting the vaccine. These will not be cases. These will be people that are being vaccinated. At the top of the list are healthcare workers, especially those that are involved with the treatment of COVID patients, as well as residents of long-term care facilities. And I think the long-term care facilities is going to be largely administered through Walgreens and CVS have, I believe, contracts to do the immunizations there. This is the Pfizer vaccine that does require two injections. It also requires storage at about minus 80 centigrade, which is about a little over a minus 100 centigrade. I think it might be a 104 Fahrenheit. And the total number of doses seems to be going down. The latest report I heard was between Moderna, which is scheduled for presentation a week from today. And so if things kind of follow Pfizer, that will also get recommended next Thursday and probably up to next Friday. So they're about a week behind Pfizer. They both had similar results in that the effectiveness of the vaccine was in the neighborhood of 95%, which is extremely high, unexpectedly high, actually. And originally, they were both supposed to have approximately 20 million doses, which was made possible through the Warp Speed program. But I think there were manufacturing issues as far as getting all of the materials to do that. I think Pfizer cut their numbers down to something like 6 million from 20 million. And I think that Moderna also has some issues. And so the two combined would have 20 million. Theoretically, they could vaccinate 20 million people with those 20 million doses, and with the anticipation that within the next 3 or 4 weeks, they would have another 20 million available for the second shot. In view of the issues they've had with the manufacturer, though, it's very possible that instead they'll basically just vaccinate 10 million and keep the other 10 million doses on hand for the second injection, so they'd be sure to be able to provide two injections for everyone that gets the vaccine. Some of the data came out for the Pfizer trials indicating that they actually did get an immune response within about 12 days of the first injection, and that seemed to be protective in about 50%. So they could boost 50% up to 95% by giving two injections, and that's what the plans are. And as far as the durability, that's still an open issue. It's not really clear how long the immunity lasts. This has only been the phase 3 trials only since the second injection, it's only been weeks, but they don't really have any long-term data on large numbers. I believe 44,000 were actually enrolled in this program. Now, if FDA does grant the EUA, then that would have the positive aspects would be that people would start getting the vaccination. Vaccines really don't do anything without actually going into people's arms. And the negative aspect is that it'll be harder to get long-term data because those that are in the trial and receive the placebo would want to switch over to the actual approved vaccine. And and how quickly the Pfizer will do that or Moderna will do that, you know, and how many people want to terminate the trial will determine how much long-term data they get. That also would impact other trials that are ongoing as far as registering or expanding, because people would prefer to, if they're really looking for protection, they would prefer to definitely get the vaccine than to enroll in the trial with a 50-50 chance of getting the vaccine instead of the placebo. So we'll provide updates as things move along. AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson both have phase three trials that involve the adenovirus. Johnson & Johnson is only one injection, where AstraZeneca is also two injections. The initial data from AstraZeneca is a lower percentage. It's closer to 62% for most of the trials. There was one trial that accidentally used a half dose for the first injection, and that one did produce a better response. It was closer to 90%, but it had a smaller number of cases, and it's not clear if that was an anomaly and or whether that was really an improvement. It's a pretty dramatic improvement to go from 62% to 90%. And it's not clear, how real the 90% is. Unfortunately, they really didn't have that many that got that protocol because it was given an error. So a limited number of people have been vaccinated with two different doses, and it's likely that for approval, they would have to expand that trial and have more patients that got the lower dose followed by the higher dose. And like I say, further recruitment of new people into trials will be become more difficult if there is one, or in this case, probably two vaccines that are available that give a 95% success rate. Although the mRNA vaccines, which is what Pfizer and Moderna have, are both new vaccines. They're the first mRNA vaccines. So long-term effects and durability of the response are not well studied yet, but they really have been used in prior FDA-approved vaccinations. As far as the pandemic itself, it is raging out of control. It won't really get under control with these vaccines because the vaccines are going to be in limited supply. Initially, the two leading contenders both required two doses between 21 and 28 days apart. And so it's close to 2 months between the time of the first shot until the patients are fully vaccinated, somewhere in the 6 to 8 week range. And therefore, since most won't get this first shot until next year, maybe not even until February or March of next year, the impact the vaccines will have on the pandemic will be limited and initially. And the pandemic itself is pretty much raging right now. And as I mentioned initially, the 3,000 death mark was crossed yesterday, and then it was repeated again today, and is very widespread. There were, just to give an idea, focusing on the deaths, yesterday, the numbers that I had, or there were several states that reported over 100 deaths yesterday. Texas had 273, Colorado had 267, Pennsylvania had 220, Illinois had 229, California had 195, and Arizona had 108. Of note was up in the Northeast, which had the largest outbreak initially back in March and April. The numbers for the three largest states were, the deaths yesterday were 116 in New Jersey, 97 in New York, and 90 in Massachusetts. Today, those three were a little bit lower. The one with the most was New York with 94. But the totals I have, which aren't complete, I could get a little bit more for California, and I haven't got the numbers yet for Missouri or Nebraska. But the numbers that are in, again, had quite a few states that had at least 100 deaths. Number one actually was Pennsylvania with 248, Illinois had 232, Texas had 244, California's got 158 so far. It's been in the 200 range. There will probably be more reported deaths in California tonight. Michigan has 194, Florida had 135. Ohio had 111, Colorado had 120, and Iowa had 102. So, these higher death rates are fairly widespread. Unfortunately, these deaths are not from Thanksgiving. That was too recent. These are really from when the numbers started to increase fairly dramatically. In the fall, associated with school years reopening and weather getting cooler and people spending more time indoor and various sports teams conducting their seasons, although in many cases they were abbreviated seasons. But the concern now is that the numbers are getting increasingly higher. I had mentioned last week that it was likely that the number of deaths would cross the 3,000 mark. I kind of anticipated them getting the 3,000 by the end of the week. The fact that it crossed 3,000 yesterday and was repeated again today, and therefore will almost certainly be repeated tomorrow, is an indication that the numbers could be getting into the 3,500 range next week, and may very well get up to 4,000 per day by the end of this month. And then it's, you know, because of the holidays, because of Thanksgiving, that's already starting to show increases in cases now, and Christmas and New Year's and other associated holidays coming up, the numbers will likely continue to increase in January as well as in February, and it won't be until February that there'll be any effects being seen from the vaccination program. And since lower numbers are going to be vaccinated, that effect would be minimal. So the numbers are going to be high for the next several months. And some have started trying to show how dramatic this 3,000 deaths a day is by putting up deadly days in the United States and what they were due to. And MSNBC recently put up a recent one based on their numbers on the COVID side. And the effects of this pandemic on this list of the 10 most deadly days, and a caveat here, these don't include any days from the 1918 pandemic, and that's due in part because daily tallies of deaths weren't available. But one of the weekly totals in the fall of 1918 suggests that the daily deaths might have been as high as 6,000. It could have been even a little bit higher. It sounds like it for 1 week, it might have even averaged about 6,000. So those aren't included in here because they don't have the exact records. But just to give an idea, in the United States, the top 10 events for recorded deaths are, number one was the Galveston hurricane, which accounted for 8,000. Then the Battle of Antietam produced 3,675 dead. This is just on the peak day. Battle of Gettysburg did 3,155. And then in fourth place is is yesterday's total of COVID deaths, which was 3,103. That's followed by the 1906 San Francisco earthquake of about 3,000. The 9/11 was 2,977. And then December 3rd COVID deaths was 2,802. December 2nd was 2,777. December 4th was 2,669. And then the number 10 position is Pearl Harbor, which had 2,403. Now, this list doesn't have today's total, and, you know, obviously doesn't have tomorrow's total. But like I said, it's very likely that tomorrow will also be at or above 3,000. And therefore, this top 10 list will start to change this week pretty significantly, and then would change even more in the upcoming weeks. And so the 3,000 reported today would be in front of the earthquake and 9/11, and it would be right next to yesterday's results. So you'd have two that were between 3,000 and 3,100. Adding today's results would knock Pearl Harbor off of the top 10 and would increase the number of days that the total was due to COVID. It would increase it from the current 4 to 5. And then assuming tomorrow's is around 3,000, then that would move in and probably in front of the earthquake and and 9/11, it would knock out one of the earlier COVID. So there'd still be 5 days. But it's expected that these numbers would continue to go up. So by the end of the month, there's a good chance that everything on this list that's not COVID, the Battle of Gettysburg at 3155 and the San Francisco earthquake at 3000 and 9/11 at 2977, would all be shoved off the list of the top 10 and replaced with other December COVID deaths. And so the COVID would represent 8 of the 10 slots. And then if not this month, next month, they would probably knock out the Battle of Antietam. And it would knock it down on the list. And by next month, it would knock it off the list. And so 9 of the top 10 most deadly events, at least with the recorded number, would be cases of COVID that were in September of, in January of 2021. And then, unfortunately, the numbers would be even higher in February. And it's likely that the 9 January 2021 dates would be knocked off the list by 9 February 2021. So by February, 9 out of the 10 would be pandemic related deaths, and they would be followed by, you know, a large number in January and a large number in December. So these 3 months would end up taking the something like almost all of the top 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 days as far as deaths are concerned. That's in marked contrast to some of the examples that were put forward by those who were trying to diminish the significance of the pandemic, who initially said it was a hoax, and then they said, well, it was a hoax by Democrats that overemphasized the significance, and then, you know, examples of drownings in swimming pools over a 10-year period were used to try to minimize the projected numbers. And back then, the projected numbers were for 100,000 deaths, and then they were from 100 to 250,000 deaths, and now the number of deaths is up to over 280,000. And projected to go up to 500,000, 500,000 by the end of February. So in this long list of days that have more than 3,000 deaths, each day will be 30, 40, 50 days long, and will really represent almost all of the events. It'll essentially be the top 30 other than Galveston, and who knows, by the end of February, they might get up to 8,000 and have a few days that get higher than the Galveston hurricane, which is number one at 8,000. So it is a serious pandemic. It's becoming a more serious pandemic. Hopefully the vaccines will get things under control in the spring or summer, and these horrendous numbers won't be repeated in the fall again. And that's assuming that either A, there's durability, or there's enough new vaccines for people to get another booster, that the virus doesn't evolve away from the vaccine. And the likelihood of that is that it doesn't evolve away is very small. The level of virus circulating in the human population now is very, very large. And widespread vaccination will lead to strong selection pressure for a variant that escapes the vaccine. All of these vaccines, even though they're made using different platforms, essentially have the same spike protein that was found in the initial isolate that was sequenced back in on January 8, 2020. And there's a lot of variation in circulation right now, and there hasn't been a lot of selection pressure because a relatively small percentage of the world's population has actually been infected. And the percentage is going to go up. The vaccine is going to significantly increase the number of people with immunity to the original sequence of the pandemic. But in all likelihood, there'll be a variant that emerges, which will require not just a booster, but will require a new target and a new vaccine and a new round. And it's very likely that the coronavirus situation will be similar to the flu situation, in which the population needs routine vaccinations to kind of keep the virus under control. And since it's already got a polybasic cleavage site, which is unlikely to go away, it'll have this ability to attack multiple different organs, causing multiple different pathologies, and necessitate some type of immunization strategy to keep the casualties and the number of people admitted to the hospital down to a manageable level. Unfortunately, it's far from clear that it is going to be manageable in the next 3 months. In fact, the preponderance of evidence suggests that there are going to be significant issues with healthcare delivery, which could very well increase the death toll, and the flattening of curves may not work all that well. The United States is unlikely to work very well at all. The compliance is abysmal in the U.S. There's way too many people that think they don't need to wear a mask, and this impinges on their civil liberties, and they still think, believe in the nonsense that this is equivalent to the flu and it's not a big deal, and 99.99% of people don't get ill effects, or some other ridiculous numbers that are floated around by the current administration as well as all over the internet. But things are going to be difficult for the next 3 months, and the vaccines do offer hope, although there's still a fair percentage of people that at least today are not interested in the vaccine. That likely will change over time if there aren't adverse effects, and if the vaccinated population do have any type of reasonable immunity. But it's just starting. There's nobody in the U.S. who received the vaccine that isn't in a clinical trial. And that should start to change hopefully next week. And we'll see how durable the antibodies are and how quickly the vaccine can be manufactured. That's it for tonight.
All right, thanks for the information. So please always go to the camera on my CEO for all the latest information. We will continue to do these podcasts as the situation unfolds. Thanks for listening.